And we're seeing a real uptick in people calling us saying, I don't know what to do. I mean, you know, I'm missing people. I'm living far away now. What do I do? The reality is, I think there is a financial connection between mental wellness and physical wellness and productivity. And, you know, I will tell you right now, the largest cost driver of disability is depression.
Bernie Dime is the president and CEO of Perspectives, a company he co-founded in 1981. What began as a counseling and psychotherapy practice has grown into a powerful resource for helping organizations and individuals address the many factors that can affect mental health. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Dougal. Glad to be here. Appreciate it.
So, Bernie, how have the last 2 years affected the mental health of the U.S. population, in your opinion?
Boy, that's a pretty large question. The simple answer is in a huge way. I think some of it is that we're hearing more about mental health issues. I'm not sure that's because there are more mental health issues. I think they've always been there. I think the severity and the amount of them are a little greater, but I think people are also, if there's any good news to what's happened with the pandemic, is people are feeling a little less stigmatized, a little more comfortable talking about mental health. And I think that's because when the world changed significantly in March of 2020, and as I think I've talked to you about before, Dougal, that for your industry, it's just amazing what's going on, and not in an amazing in a positive way, but it's really changed the whole complexion. But it affected people and the way they look at the future. So people left their workplace, which had many good things, right? Because it, you know, for them, they saw it as, I don't have to commute so much. I can be more with my family. And all that may have been good for the first couple of weeks or months. But then I think things changed significantly. I think people were affected by a number of challenges, right? The first challenge, I think, was isolation, not being in front of people and with people, not being in an environment that they're used to and comfortable with. We started seeing the level of anxiety and depression increase. I can tell you in our business, with the phone calls we get from people in trouble or in pain, what we're seeing is that the acuity of the situation is more. The problems that are coming in are much more difficult, much more painful. People who might normally have had some issues are now having more severe issues. I think there's some logical and logistical things like the Zoom, the Teams fatigue, the video fatigue that's really hit. And I think that's because, again, it's tied to a lack of social intimacy and social connectedness. I also think that what's affected mental health is the changing and added new roles that people have. So now you work, you go home, or before you work, you go home. And then you become a parent, right? You deal with parenting, you deal with cooking, you deal with relational issues. Now you're home all the time, so you're dealing with all of those things. In fact, you may be a teacher all of a sudden, and you certainly didn't train to be a teacher for your own kids. So that, I think, put a tremendous amount of stress on people. I think the intimacy issue is a big one too. You know, it's always good to be closer and more with your spouse or partner. On the other hand, as we know, sometimes a little distance is a good thing, and that distance was removed as well. So there are a lot more marital and couple relational issues that came up, parenting issues. And I think the bigger things were the difficulty with boundaries. All of a sudden, there was no separation between work and your personal life. So where you might have been able to drive home or take the train home and have that time to decompress and switch, that no longer happened. You literally had maybe the time to get from your office on the second floor to the kitchen on the first floor, which, unless you really live in a huge house, is maybe a 3-minute walk. You now have that, and that affects it. And I think the last is, in terms of the challenges, is a lot higher use and misuse of drugs and alcohol. I think people turn to that more. I think they drink more, they use drugs more, and, you know, that caused all kinds of problems. So I think some of the good stuff, as I said, the easier commuting, some of the improvements, the easier commuting. There's a potential for more relaxing time. I don't know about you, but my wife and I would take walks, you know, in the middle of the day. I didn't get to do that when I was downtown or when I was in my office. And a feeling of having more autonomy, that I have more control over my life in some ways. So That's a long-winded answer, but I hope it covers everything I think you were looking for.
Yeah, that's a litany of mental issues, right? Mental health issues. And they're all kind of, I guess, tied together to some degree. I mean, isolation leads to maybe some fatigue, leads to some anxiety. I mean, you tell me, but it all seems to be somewhat tied together. Let me ask you this. I mean, what were people getting from the office when they were in the office more on the 5 day a week? And just in general, from a mental health standpoint, what are people getting? And I know there's all kinds of office environments, but you know, from what we've seen from a cultural standpoint, companies are a lot more likely to hold on to employees if that employee has friends or a friend in that firm or that company. But is that realistic to expect now? Is that what people want? Or is the desire to create those connections in the office maybe less so now that you, you're not going to be there as much and you've got your family, I guess, and neighborhood friends?
Yeah, you know, that's a really great question, Dougal. And, you know, I think, and it's a complicated one, as are all of these. I think that the relationships you have at work are different than the relationships you have at home and in your neighborhood, right? And with your family. And I think aside from the fact that, you know, these are people that you have a work friendship or a work relationship with, you also have some mentoring and some intellectual stimulation related to the work you do. So you can walk into somebody else's office and I can walk into your office and say, hey, Dougal, I'm working on this deal here. Did you ever have anything like this? Or what happened? And if I'm younger, I'm looking to learn from you. If I'm a colleague of yours, I'm looking to get some sharing. And honestly, you could do that on Zoom too. It takes a little more work than walking down the hall to the next office, grabbing a cup of coffee. And after a while, being in a box is kind of, you know, you're in these little boxes and it's tough. So I think that it's something that people are missing and will continue to miss unless this changes. I will say that at the beginning of the pandemic, so in the early part of 2020, when this all started, I think that people used to say, if you're an introvert, this is great. I love this. Extroverts, we really hurt. Now I'm an extrovert. So I could feel the lack of connectedness, right? Even though we're talking and on a box or whatever. That shifted somewhere around September, October, when it became clear, this is not going to be a couple of months. And I think introverts and extroverts both felt that lack of connection. Because even introverts who don't always like to go out, need to socialize. We all do. We're social animals. So I think it's something that we're going to be struggling with for a long time because, you know, we're talking about what does the next world look like, right? Are we going to be hybrid? Are we going to be working all from home? Are we going to be working back in the office? And I think there's going to be a real difference in how we relate to each other on a work level now. So I don't know that that's ever going to go away. And I think, again, I know this gets out of the realm of what you're talking about, but we don't even know the impact this had on schools, on children of all ages, because they basically spent a year learning at home and not relating to their peers. And the education of young people is not just the academics, it's the social skills. So, you know, maybe I gave you a little more information than you were looking for, but I guess the ultimate summary is, I think it's going to be affected for a long time. And I think it did affect people. And I think it did, it led to a greater propensity toward mental health issues.
Like a lot of things that we talk about on the real estate side, we can help guide our clients to a decision, but ultimately the decision is upon them in terms of what they want to employ in terms of a prescriptive work from home model or a hybrid model or things of that. But the reality is it's still a work in progress for many. Ultimately, I think we were talking about this a little bit before the call. You know, we're going into this recession, a little bit more of a labor market, better suited to the employer. Talking with a lot of C-level people, they are in the belief camp that people are better together to some degree. So I think there will be more people coming back into the cities and into the suburban campuses, so to speak. But that doesn't necessarily address the productivity question, which every company, I mean, look, companies want to talk about mental health, but, you know, they're beholden to shareholders and stakeholders. And if you have a, you know, a strong mentally healthy person, employee, they're much better and probably more productive. But, you know, companies don't have souls, people do. So they're really looking for productive people. And you talked, you know, about fatigue and burnout and things like that. What is that kind of happy medium? And where do people find that in a homework balance and or other lifestyle choices they make to get that? Is it, you know, taking the afternoon off or an hour or two to play tennis outside with someone and have your me time? Is that enough? And are you going to be more productive? What's that ratio of what you do for yourself versus others? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Let me sort of back up though, if you don't mind, and comment on something you were mentioning earlier. And that is that, you know, I do believe very strongly that productivity is important to shareholders. There's absolutely no doubt about it. I think what's important also to shareholders is the understanding that productivity comes not just from somebody putting out work, but people who put out work are people who basically feel better about themselves. So let's forget for a minute about the financial ramifications of this. People who are mentally and physically well tend to be more productive. They tend to be happier, more fulfilled, and more productive. They also tend to stick around longer. So the reality is, I think there is a financial connection between mental wellness and physical wellness and productivity. And, you know, I will tell you right now, the largest cost driver of disability is depression. So, you know,
I'm sorry, the largest what of disability?
Cost driver of disability is depression. That is the largest, the number one claim and the number one cost in terms of premiums and in terms of costs for treatment. And so if you think about that, and that depression can come because people emotionally are depressed, or it can come because there's some injury or something that goes on that causes them to be more depressed, right? So I think the reality is if you don't understand the connection, you're not going to make the changes necessary. And I think the other thing is, the other reality that is a financial reality to business employers is, we're talking about retention and recruitment, right? And I will tell you right now, if you're looking to hire people my age, and my kids always tell me that I'm not in their demographic, by the way, that's not a positive, a compliment. They're always referring to my elderly status. But unless you're hiring people like me and not younger people, you know, you're going to have trouble finding people and retaining people. Most people, when they just did a study, I think the third most requested benefit by employees was mental health and mental wellness benefits. So the reality of the situation is people are making decisions about where to go and where to stay based on how they feel the company is supporting them from a mental wellness point of view. So when you ask about what do? How do you do it? I think you need to be strategic and have all your plans in alignment, right? So giving people a day off, a mental health day off, is great. Providing good insurance that has that is good. But if you, for instance, provide health insurance that covers behavioral health, but you have a high deductible, you're putting one more barrier in front of people to prevent them from going for the help they need. If you tell people and encourage people at work for you to take time off, to take time, a mental health day, and yet you pile work on them and don't give them the opportunity to do that, you're not really supporting them. So finding out how to truly support and provide those benefits and be consistent with those benefits is really important, right? I think that employers need to sort of back up and think about that. They need to look strategically. I'm biased. My industry is not real estate. It's mental health and behavioral health and organizational consulting. And I will tell you right now, the organizations who made it through this and who will continue to are the ones who've created a psychologically safe environment, which means there's no bullying. There's encouragement to get help. There's an understanding that if people take off time to get help for their mental illness or mental wellness issues, they're going to come back and be more productive. And, you know, we need to get over this sort of image that mental health, people who have mental health issues are malingerers or who, you know, they're not real. These are real illnesses. Depression, anxiety are real illness, and they're all treatable illnesses, just like cardiological issues or neurological issues or physical issues. And if we give people the time to heal and we give them the support to heal, they not only get better, they come back to work more productive. And guess what? They stick around a little longer. So again, long-winded answer, but I think it's on employers to really kind of begin to have these conversations and look for these solutions and be consistent with these solutions.
Right. So I've seen a lot of advertising for these online mental health services. Is that effective, as effective as other things? I mean, it's obviously very convenient to be in the comfort of your own home, schedule these things, talk to a mental health professional. What are the pros and cons of something like that? And how costly is it for employers to offer something like that up?
So I will say that, again, there have been some good things from my perspective that have come out of the pandemic. And one is this sort of destigmatization move, right? We're not there yet, but we're getting closer. The other is access. Access has always been a problem for mental. So I think, you know, the virtual healthcare, I think is it was going to be here anyway. But I think what happened was the pandemic kind of took the slope of the curve and made it much more steep, right? So I think it's good. I think it can be very good. I will tell you, just like in every other industry, there are disruptors, and disruption is a good thing for any industry. It's been good for behavioral health. However, a lot of it is being driven by venture capital and private equity. Not bad, but sometimes the profit motive becomes a little more important than the actual quality of the treatment and kind of thinking about what the best way to provide treatment is. So just to give you a sense of how crazy it's gotten, there are 10,000 mental health apps out there. Now, I don't know about you, that to me is extremely overwhelming. And without any sense of expertise, I'm not sure I would know which one works or to choose. So I really still believe that triage, which is that at the front end, figuring out what people need and trying to fit them with what they need as opposed to what I have in my tool chest, is a big thing. And again, I'm very biased. I believe that employee assistance programs are great because they are the hub. So you call me and you say I'm having these issues, I can get a sense of not only what they are, but what kind of tools or arrows in my quiver I can pull out. And how do I fit a treatment style or modality to what your needs are that are different than Bernie Dime's needs or John Doe's needs or Gail Smith's needs? And then I can hook you up with that particular provider or provider group. And I can also make sure that it's affordable to you, right? Based on what you can afford to pay, what your insurance is. I think what's happened with sort of these top tier level EAPs versus the free EAPs or those things is there's been a move towards use of technology to speed up the process. Now, the negative thing is we do have a supply chain issue with providers. The demand for mental health services has skyrocketed. The level of providers has stayed the same. I think I may have mentioned this before, but if you do, this is really rough math, so forgive me, but there are roughly 330 million people in this country. At any given time, one in five people are going to be in need of some kind of mental health services, whether it's inpatient, outpatient, most is outpatient or whatever. There are only about 700,000 providers in this country. So if you start doing the math on that, you basically have 65 million, which is roughly one in five, that need help. You have 700,000. You basically have one provider for every 100 clients. Now, when I was starting out, and I don't do much therapy anymore, I'm more of an advocate. If I had a caseload of 30 to 35 people, that was a lot. So that means basically two-thirds of the folks that need help are not getting any help. And there's actually a wait of about 6 months to get a psychiatrist now. That's not a good thing, especially if people are depressed and suicidal. So we need to deal with that inequity. We need to make sure that health insurance is more available. And when you ask what the cost is, you know, behavioral health is a slice, a tiny slice in costs of what the total insurance premiums are and the total cost of insurance is. Untreated mental health problems cause all kinds of costs. They're really a high cost driver. So, you know, I think we're starting to see this parity in mental health with medical. become more of a reality. It's been around for a while, but nobody's been enforcing it. So I would strongly recommend that the best investment for an employer is good health insurance that covers and gives people access to behavioral health care. And some of these organizations that are out there are good providers. I think also what we're seeing is a lot of medication commercials. I have trouble with those because we live in a society where the first line of defense is medication. Sometimes it works, but again, that triage, that upfront. I mean, when you go into an emergency room, you don't want somebody looking at you and going, I think medicine will work, as opposed to doing a full triage to find out that maybe you need surgery or maybe you need some other intervention. That's, I think, what's most important. And we're losing sight of that. So I think we need to return to that. That's why I advocate EAPs. And I think virtual therapy is a great thing. It's really opened up access.
Yeah. I'm going to switch gears for a little bit, but it's kind of an important topic is, you know, going back to the hybrid model and where it makes sense and where you get benefits to being in an office versus on your own sort of thing. And one of the things I've noticed, and I don't know what the stats are, but people seem to have become more polarizing. And my gut is telling me that people are sitting in their homes. They've got the media on that they want to see and that's drawn to them. And they're around family members and other people in their community that are similar, like-minded. And one of the benefits of being in a major metropolis, being in an office with, you know, different kinds of people is you get different ideas, different perspectives. And that's the beauty of it. It seems that we're getting away from that. Regardless of the hybrid model, there's the media out there pushing one way. But it seems that the cities, the offices were places where you had to be forced to interact with people. And you had to be forced to hear their stories a little bit, whether or not you wanted to or not. I'm concerned about the long-term ramifications of people isolating themselves and getting into some of these, you know, more radical ideas based upon what they want to hear. So I don't know if you can speak to that at all.
Well, no, I think you're right, because I think we've spent a lot of time today and in the past focusing on the effects of the pandemic. And there's no doubt there have been great effects, but there's also been a lot of social unrest. There's also been a lot of political unrest. And whatever side of the fence you're on doesn't really matter, because what you hit on is so critical. People seem to have lost the ability to have civil conversations and respect the listening and the dialogue, right? And I think you're right. It's easier to be further removed from that if you're sitting in your home, because you're exposed to people that are like you. You're not even exposed to other things. You're picking and choosing what you want. And you're losing a whole realm of the world that may think differently from you. And that diversity and that difference is important. So I think you're right about that. I also don't want to take lightly, and again, my kids would give me a hard time about this, but I don't want to take lightly the impact that social media has had on people. I mean, probably one of the largest places or the biggest places where bullying occurs is on social media. And so again, from social media, we've learned to get these sort of sound bites without a lot of depth. And you're right, we choose our social media based on what our view is. So if you're one side of the coin, you go to Fox. If you're the other side of the coin, you go to MSNBC. If you're the other side of the coin, you go to CNN. And so there's not even a semblance of learning all the sides of the story. And so I think you're right. And I think that the isolation that we feel, the isolation that's happened has made it even worse. And I think the other thing is, I think we've learned to be afraid. We're afraid of the pandemic. We're afraid of what goes on in the cities. And, you know, a lot of what happens, I'm not minimizing that, but a lot of that has gotten blown out of proportion. And again, you know, when left not knowing something, we have the same, it's a natural course of human events to move toward the worst case scenario, right? So when the doctor says to you, I'm going to give you a test on Friday and we'll give you the results on Monday, doesn't matter. From Friday night until Monday morning, you're thinking, I have cancer, I'm going to die, all the terrible things. Nobody sits there and goes, I'm going to be okay. It's the same thing. So I think you've hit on something. And I think that that's another place where I think employers need to get ahead of the game. That's another reason why I think it's important for employers to invite people back, but to do it in a way that encourages them to be a part of the solution as opposed to a dictate that says you have to come back. That's kind of like having a parent say you have to do something because I tell you so. Sure. I mean, these are adults. So I think that bringing people back and holding these conversations, opening up the water cooler, if you will, becomes something that I think put a dent in what you're saying in terms of this polarity.
Yeah, we've seen a number of people, and it's mostly, you know, white collar, well-educated folks that have the ability to work from wherever, move to areas like Bozeman, Montana, parts of Idaho, you know, little isolation type places. And we're starting to hear a little bit more cracks in the armor on that. I'm curious from your perspective. I mean, you go out into some of these areas where you can get outside more. There's beauty. I mean, I personally love it. Would probably do it if the circumstances would allow. But I can tell right. you, it's also important for me to have community. And it's important for me to have a network of people. And I thrive on that. And I'd be afraid if I moved to some of these places. You're not changing the baseline of your personality per se and things. And we're starting to hear of some people that are questioning those decisions within companies that have done that. And, you know, can you talk about that a little bit in terms of, you know, the actual physical place you go to?
Yeah. You know, so I think what the theme of your questions, and I think it's a good theme, is that we've lost balance. We really have lost balance. And obviously, the balance we come to in the future will not be the same balance we had in the past. That makes sense. But right now, people made decisions based on their view of the world at the moment. And you're right. When you're in isolation, I mean, going to Bozeman, Montana, it's beautiful out there. I mean, there's nothing wrong with going out there for a month or two. And most of us think I could live out there for the rest of our lives. And then we get out there. And after a month or two, we're like, all right, this is great, but I want to go back to my friends and then come back here next year. I think that we're starting to see that happen. I think isolation is okay for some people. I think that environment is okay for some people. But I think that there's been a lot of press about how that's the way people want to be. And I don't agree with that. So I think it's really important, again, to sort of start where each person is at and to help them understand what it is they need and how that matches. And that's where, I mean, we're seeing a real uptick in people calling us saying, I don't know what to do. I mean, you know, I'm missing people. I'm living far away now. What do I do? And, you know, our conversation has been, well, rethink your decisions. Think about why you did this, right? Sometimes it's not so easy to do.
Is that coming from the place of a parent? You've used that term before?
Yeah, right. As I said, but I'm serious though, all kidding aside. I mean, you know, what we're trying to teach people is to rethink things on a constant basis. And I think a lot of times employees feel like they've made a decision and they are like kids in this regard. We all are. I can't go back on my decision because my employer is going to be, you know, upset with me. And I think, again, having a culture in your organization that allows you to talk about things openly and communicate transparently really makes a big difference. You know, I was reading an article. I was thinking about you. I can't remember if it was the New York Times or Time Magazine about how office environments in the Tribune are changing the look of their office to accommodate people. And, you know, I do believe that's an important thing. I mean, you know, years ago, we all had offices. Then we went to an open, you know, concept where people were sitting at cubicles. I think things change constantly. And I think it's really important to think about the environment of your office when you're thinking about having people come back. And the question is, how do you make it more accommodating? You know, there's a lot of studies that have been done around colors, right? And how certain colors make it better for people and people feel more comfortable. The layouts of offices, I mean, one of the office structures, I'm not good at this, but you know, they literally have a tiered flow so that people can sit on these sort of benches with their computers and work. You know what? Maybe that's a good thing to think about and redesign your office. So it's not a either or, I go back or I don't go back. It's how do we make this office? And there's a cost attached. But there's a cost attached to not doing it as well. How do we make it more comfortable for people to come in? And there were some fascinating offices that I would love to work in. Yeah. That 10 years ago, I would have said, no way, that's way too much for me.
Yeah, so, as long as you have the mobility of your laptop and you can just work from wherever. A lot of the offices are being built for comfort and collaboration. You're incorporating biophilia. I mean, I've talked about this on other podcasts. You're maybe even allowed to bring a dog in some buildings and mimic your living room and all these sort of great things. Yep. The A&D community is always coming up with great ideas to make people more productive and happy and safe, but it tends to maybe swing a little bit too much one way. So, you know, people want that, but then people also want some private space too. So we'll see where it goes. But it's an interesting place and time. And any predictions for the future of mental health in the U.S.?
Oh, boy.
And you can take that question however you want to.
Well, mine certainly isn't going to get better. No, all kidding aside, I really do feel that it would be very, very helpful if all of us realized that mental health is okay, you know, that it's okay to not be okay. I think I've said this before. My fantasy, don't get too excited. My fantasy is that when a person right now goes into their CEO's office and says, you know, Dougal, I know I've been working for you for years. I was just diagnosed with cancer. I need to take a little time off and get some help. Or will you give me some days off so I can go? First thing you probably do is very sympathetically go, what can we do to support you? Because I'm a good employee. I want to keep you. With mental health, that hasn't been the case. So my fantasy is somebody goes into a CEO and the CEO isn't scared of it any more so than they are of cancer. And they're able to say, we want to support you. You know, and then everything's lined up to support the person. So I feel that we're beginning to see a chink in the armor of mental health stigma. I've been involved in the National Action Alliance for Suicide Prevention, the Workplace Task Force, for 15 years. I've been doing a lot of talks around suicide and depression and mental health in the workplace. And really, I like to think it's because I'm a great speaker and I'm a good looking guy. I think it's because people are scared to death and they don't know what to do. So it's opened things up. I think we need to support having those conversations in organizations. We also need to, I think, lobby our legislatures to give more money to train more therapists, because we do have a shortage and that's not a good thing. If we want to continue to give people the ability to get treatment or help earlier on in the process, which is less expensive and less traumatic, then we need to have people out there and we need to have these conversations. So I'm optimistic that things are moving in the right direction. I fear that, as with everything, we get real hyped up and then things slow down and we forget about it. So I hope that doesn't happen here. But my prediction is that there will be more of a focus on mental health. And if nothing else, these younger people in and coming into the workplace are going to push us. And that's good, because if we do that, I think we're all going to be better off for that. So I don't know if that, I'm not a seer or a fortune teller, but I'd like to hope that there's some good things that have come out of this. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Well, look, you're a mental health professional on an office-based podcast. So it's clearly, you know, coming into the mainstream. And I think the conversation hopefully just becomes more so within the C-suite. And I appreciate, you know, what you do. And I thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me. And I appreciate you having the conversation.